So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Bruce Poontip. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
How are you doing today? You all right?
I'm doing great.
So, Bruce, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Sure. I'm the founder of G Adventures. We're, I guess, at the heart of what we do. We're the largest small group adventure holiday company in the world.
Uh-huh.
We run over 100,000 passengers to over 1,000 trips to over 100 countries around the world. So, and also the author of a new book called Looptail, which is what brought us together here for this interview today.
Indeed.
Which talks about a philosophy on how we transcended, I guess, our business and been able to export tourism based on a business model that supports local communities and kind of redefines how people look at their holiday time.
Okay. So, I mean, you mentioned the book, the Looptail book, and can you tell me about, I mean, you told me about what is it? Is it a story? Is it a manifesto? Is it a manual? Or is it all of those things?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. I think part of the success, I guess, of the book has been, it's been hard to categorize, but that was also, before it was released, that was also an issue with the publishers because, I mean, it started out to write as a business book.
Uh-huh.
And when I was motivated to write a business book, because we have a great story of how, you know, we started this business and how, you know, our path over the last 23 years. But obviously, it's my life as well. And
sure.
It turned into a bit of a memoir. I wouldn't say autobiography as much as a memoir. But at the same time, it also turned out to be a bit of an inspirational kind of book because it's a very motivating and inspiring story. So it kind of fit into quite a few categories. But ultimately, it's a great story about life and success in business,
mm-hmm.
but also reflects on how people live their lives as well.
I mean, it struck me, I know it's been endorsed by Tony Hsieh, but it struck me that the feel of the book and almost the style of the book and almost the intro to the book in a way, is very like Tony's Delivering Happiness as well.
I guess you could say that. I mean, we have very different businesses.
Well, yes, of course.
I guess you could say that, you know, his business, I guess, his book, I would say, is a bit more business-oriented in terms of, you know, when I decided to write a business book, I realized very quickly I was going to have a hard time with that
mm-hmm.
because I couldn't, you know, a business book with dry kind of figures, I started, you know, doing figures and doing...
graphs and charts.
Or theory about business.
Yes.
Wasn't going to be my thing. But, you know, when I decided, I'm not a writer by nature.
Uh-huh.
I'm a storyteller. And, you know, a storyteller and a writer, I found out are two very different things.
Yes.
Found out very quickly. And so when I had the idea of writing a book, I thought I knew what I wanted to do. But as I, you know, decided to go down the path, it slowly changed into being something very different. And it became more of a stream of consciousness of my thoughts on business and that is it. It is similar to what Tony did.
Okay. So first up, I mean, can you explain the concept of Looptail for me? Because it actually does mean, it refers to a particular sort of thing and a particular almost cycle in a way. But
The actual definition of Looptail is that little tick that's under G. So that's the you know, what a Looptail actually is in terms of the definition.
Yeah.
Now, our logo at G, we swing that around to give it kind of a circle around the letter G.
Uh-huh.
And so that's always been kind of our business model in our logo of G, and that's why we're G Adventures. It also creates an O around the G, which stands for Great Ocean.
Okay.
And Great Ocean was, you know, is the translation of Dalai Lama in English, the Great Ocean of Wisdom. So, but for us, it's great. We used Looptail as a business philosophy on how we kind of, over the last 23 years, we've evolved into being, you know, from a business and an aggressive entrepreneurial business, we transformed into more of a social enterprise. And Looptail for us is, you know, people have used this term manifesto, but it is more of a description of how we came to the ideas of running our company and how we did things very differently and how that created the success that we've had around the world with becoming, you know, a market leader in our space. And so Looptail is kind of that theory of paying it forward, and it's a business model of, you know, why karma, community, and culture matter in business. things that you don't really learn in business school of what makes businesses successful, especially in the modern economy with this, you know, we're in the middle of a social revolution. All of these things have changed the way people look at business.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had our own ideas on that. And that is what is kind of detailed in Looptail.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the idea about paying it forward and the karma and things? Because you've got a fantastic story in terms of how you've decided to set up G Adventures and how and your view of the travel market and how you wanted to make sure that travel and tourism actually benefits the local communities that people go and visit.
Yeah. I mean, there's two parts to that question there, but I mean, you know, the idea of karma in business is one that kind of really has, I get the most questions about, because people view karma as a bit of a Buddhist or spiritual thing. But it more, and you know, the idea of paying it forward is more of a Western kind of idea.
Yeah.
But it really is the same thing.
Yes.
And, you know, where it comes into business is when you get your business model right, it's about getting your culture and your people right, especially when you're in a people business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it works with all businesses, but also with your life personally. When you get all the things right with your business model or your life with, you know, centered around, the guiding purpose of that, we're all, our purpose in life is to achieve happiness, and you build those within your business model. And if you get all those things right, anyone who touches your brand, you know, sees that you're differentiated by, you know, your company culture and your business. All of the other things that you learn in business school about what makes a business successful will fall into place. So you need a bit of faith, and you need a bit of understanding of balancing your business, that if you get everything right, that, you know, all those things that you want in a business, like attracting the best people, staff retention,
yep,
employee engagement, you know, profitability, growth, all those things come because of happy people that generate the success of your business. And especially with the transparency created today with social media, businesses are so transparent, and the relationship with customers is so different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-way conversation, which has never been the case before.
Sure.
Marketing is no longer one way. So all of these things play into why, you know, karma matters, because I'm paying it forward, because you get all those things right. You get all those benefits that, you know, traditional businesses, you know, you focus on profitability, focus on growth, and then you kind of work backwards. But in the Looptail philosophy, you work on your people and your culture and everything first, and all those other things fall into place. And it's expanding your spectrum of how you gauge success.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me it's a much, much more organic sort of and more balanced sort of way of looking at things, and almost like seeing our place in the world, understanding our place in the world, and being able to contribute positively to the world through business and the way that we lead our lives, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I like to tell people that it doesn't necessarily take away from the aggressiveness that's needed to be an entrepreneur and be in a competitive business space.
No.
And, you know, to be in that landscape. What it is, though, is addressing the modern, you know, today, where consumers and employees and anyone, and, you know, and your customers,
sure,
all have access to tools that create the social environment that's so transparent, bringing your company, you know, people engage with brands very differently today.
Yes.
You know, Nike used to put up Michael Jordan commercials, you know, 15 years ago, and it was a one-way conversation. You know, you just saw these commercials of Michael Jordan, so you went into a Nike store and you remembered that commercial, it made you feel a certain way, and you would buy that item. But today, you know, if you love the Nike brand, you can follow the CEO, you can follow employees, you can follow their executive team on Twitter, you can look at their Facebook page, you can follow their factories in China. There's so much information right in your pocket that there's now a two-way conversation about your relationship with Nike or
yep,
any company. And so Looptail kind of addresses all that by bringing, you know, that social revolution into a business model that allows your employees and your customers to be the biggest brand advocates once they engage with your company and understand that your business stands for something more than just its product.
Well, I think that's right. And I think in the book, you go into that in much, much more detail about how, well, first of all, you actually talked about, you mentioned a book called Maverick by Ricardo Semler, which you said you read early on in your
yes,
career, and you really liked it. But then actually, as you got more into it, you thought you became a bit more unsettled with it and then developed your own sort of philosophy. And then you talk,
yes,
and then you go into, and you talk about that, the idea of your employees becoming your brand ambassadors and things. And can you tell us a little bit about how you've adopted a certain organizational structure? Because there's in there you talk about core and halo systems and things like you've dropped the title of CEO and you've given every customer-facing employee the title of chief experience officer. I mean,
yes,
it's just like, it's almost like turning everything inside out or upside down and things. And I'd be really, really fascinated to learn a bit more of the thinking behind sort of that and also the results that it's produced, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those things, to be honest, have been more organic than our growth.
Right.
Because as we started down the road of changing the way we looked at our business model, mm-hmm. traditional business things like HR, for instance, didn't fit within our business model.
Right.
And it became very apparent that, you know, very common things that we take for granted in business and like managing people through HR became very odd for us and became, you know, a square peg in a round hole. And then when we started recruiting, one of the most important things about a business model that, you know, a purpose-driven business model is the recruiting process. And, it started with our elimination of HR because HR is a science in many ways for companies. As they get larger, they manage the bottom 10% of your employee base.
Yeah.
They set rules punishing the most high-performing people. HR is put in place to kind of limit companies from making errors as they get bigger. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up taking away people's freedoms. And it's the complete opposite of the way I thought, because as we were growing and we were getting more successful, and we were able to do more cool things as a company because we could afford it because we were getting bigger, I wanted to create more freedom, and HR is set up to do the exact opposite. Right. So how we manage people, how we promote our culture, how we engage our customers to our culture and transcend our product in the relationship with our customers, all of those kind of things. And also making a mental shift within our company about being customer focused as opposed to, because there was a point where our culture became so important, but it also became very insular.
Right.
We started becoming really into ourselves. Because we were, you know, this cool company that was doing all these great things, but we have to remember what our, you know, what our core purpose was. And that's the year that I decided I was giving up my CEO title,
right,
to give the most important title in the company to the most important employees. And the most important employees are customer-facing employees. So we have literally hundreds of chief experience officers. Anyone who deals with customers,
yeah,
in our company is considered a chief experience officer, to just make a mental shift in our thinking that the most important title and the most important role within the organization is anyone who deals with customers. Now, when we did that, a lot of people thought it was hokey and gimmicky, and I got criticized, and even people within the organization who were tour leaders, like all of our tour leaders in the field who were dealing with customers, all became CEOs all of a sudden. And a lot of these people, didn't work with us only. They'd work years and in different countries were proud to be tour guides or tour leaders, went to school, and suddenly we were saying, no, you're going to be the CEO now. And there was pushback. But over time, as we got people to understand the purpose of it and we differentiated the company, it suddenly created something that was so unique and creating differentiation. And then we ended up building status around what a CEO was. Now we have people from all over the world, the best in class in terms of leaders and guides, wanting to be CEOs because they're considered the best of the best.
Yeah.
When it comes to leading customers, because they're so focused on the customer experience. And so it became a movement almost, and it increased the quality of our product and the relationship with our customers, but it was all something that was organic and true in its original intention, which was to make a mental shift for the company to put the customer at the forefront of what we did. So all of these things were kind of, once we started down the track and started making these changes and reinventing our business with the goal, and then, you know, then social media came on in the last 10 years and the idea of social enterprise started entering into our things. All of these things were kind of a path that was really the motivation why, because it was such an extraordinary time for us. And we saw the results in dollars and cents too, because our business has had double digit growth for 23 years. And as we kind of took a leadership spot in our space as well over that time, mm-hmm. I knew it was an interesting story, and I knew I had to tell it. And when I decided I wanted to write a book, in many ways, I wanted to write the book internally, so the people that work for the company, like we have over 2,000 employees around the world now, I wanted to know where we came from. And so the book, you know, one of my motivations was to make sure we had to document, you know, the process of where we got to today. And so people who work for the company today can understand where we came from as well. So all of these things played into, you know, the development of, you know, why we wrote the book, but also some of the ideas that, you know, that came about over time. It wasn't just one day we said, like, let's just be different. Mm-hmm. Let's think of everything different. Let's be disruptive. It wasn't like that. It was a long process. And from our experiences, I'm just staying true to what our purpose was and our desires to redefine social enterprise. Early on in you know, social enterprise is a little bit more common now.
Yeah.
It led to, you know, doing what we needed to do to get that done and not letting anything traditional get in our way.
It seemed to me also that by making that sort of change, I guess what you've also done is that you got so focused on your culture that it's almost like became dominant, but then you made that shift towards putting the customer at the heart of your business and creating all those chief experience officers, all the CEOs, as it were.
Yeah.
Did it, as a result, did it make them almost like raise standards and almost become more entrepreneurial in of themselves?
Yeah, I mean, that is a small part of it. But what it does do is it gives you an overall a better workforce. And, you know, I don't even like to use the expression workforce. It creates ambassadors for your company. It unites people. You know, my biggest challenge that I have, that other entrepreneurs and other business people don't have, not all of them have, is that, you know, I have employees in 100 countries.
Yeah.
You know, I have people spread out all over the world. You know, when I see Tony's business, right, I mentioned the CEO of Netflix in my book, when, you know, they have all their employees in one building.
Sure.
You know, I have employees in over 100 countries, and I've got to motivate them every day to wake up, you know, want to work hard, want to love the company, want to deliver on our brand promise, and also at the same time reach their potential in their lives.
Sure.
And probably about half of my employees I might never meet in their entire careers with me. So I have to do that from a remote place.
Yes.
And it's a type of leadership that I never signed up for when I, you know, started this company with 2 credit cards, you know, 23 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I have to evolve in the process, and I've had to engage even our employees on a global – and I also have to deal with cultural differences between Asians, Latin Americans, Africans, Europeans, you know, people from 160 countries booked trips with us in the last year. So all of these things make it a little bit more complicated. So I had to engage people with our company first and our philosophy and core values first before rolling it out into how it's delivered within a product. So, and so that, you know, all of those things are what, you know, played a role in developing that philosophy. And, you know, I knew that it's been very successful for us, but as it kind of, you know, as I kind of got into it, I realized that I had to engage people in their lives. It wasn't just at work. I had to kind of, you know, bring integrity to people's lives that work for the company, because, you know, we live in a world that kind of people separate work and life. And there's all this talk of work-life balance, and, you know, work is separate somehow from life. And and it shouldn't be like that. People should pursue their passion, and their what they do should be passionate about. And in order to do that, you have to have a company that you love, respect, you want to be part of. And all of that kind of comes together in delivering exceptional service, exceptional product development, innovation, happiness, you know, growth, profitability, all of those things generated from getting that business model right.
And so, I mean, I would just say to people that it's a fascinating story, and it's an inspiring story, but it's also a story with big ups and downs as well, which you document very honestly as well. I mean, what would you say would be some of the biggest lessons that you've learned over the last few years? And if you could do a Doctor Who and go back in time in the TARDIS, would you do anything differently?
I don't know if I would do anything differently, but I mean, you know, the word passion and purpose are thrown around a lot lately, but you have to know your purpose and be passionate about what you do. Mm-hmm. And the thing that that's kind of a cliche to entrepreneurs, but, you know, being an entrepreneur has very high highs and very low lows.
Yeah.
And if you're not passionate about what you do, and you don't see that purpose, you know, very few people make it through those really low lows. And the thing that I learned, you know, through the process is more life lessons as an entrepreneur and how it integrates with – how it intertwines with your life. You know, when I went to school my idea of what an entrepreneur was a very cold. I always thought business is cold. Business is unemotional.
Sure.
You know, business, you hear that all the time. Business is business. It is what it is. All of these kind of things. Because, you know, there's a side of business. It's very hard sometimes. But when I started, it was that trip to Tibet and Bhutan, you know, that I took in 1997 that really changed the way I thought about my life first. But how, you know, I was definitely a type of person that made all decisions based on, you know, on data and science and information. But there's a side to life where you work on instinct and, you know, faith and what you believe in and passion and, you know, some even spirituality, whatever it is you use to make your decisions.
Yes.
And intertwining some of that into how you live your life, you know, finding your place in the universe as an individual person, but also what the purpose of your company. When I started kind of connecting all these two things without getting, you know, too over-spiritual, because, you know, I'm not someone who is committed to any form of organized religion either, but I do believe in, you know, us as humans finding our place in the universe, like why you're here.
Sure.
And you know, your business is your life. When you start a business, it is part of your life, and your business should also have that same calling, but why and its purpose and why it's here, no matter what it is, whether you do computer chips or you run a travel company, it's all relevant and intertwining all that together. And I learned over time how those things are so inextricably linked, because you learn about business as being something in isolation. You learn about work as being something that you know, try to package off. So, you know, all these things about, you know, working for the weekend, thank God it's Friday, all of these things to separate these two things from, you know, I don't believe in people being workaholics either, because the work-life balance tends to, for people to think that they should work till 11 at night work all the time. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the two shouldn't be separated, and your life should be about pursuing your passion and pursue your own personal happiness, and you build a plan on how you get there. And what you do every day for 8 hours should be part of that plan.
Sure.
And, you know, and when I got that right within my own life is what it changed over to how our business thinks and runs, because it shouldn't be any different.
Yeah.
And it's the emotional intelligence is the thing that I learned, I guess, over the 23 years of running my business that surprised me the most. I thought, you know, going into business, you know, you're motivated by being profitable. And when you're more profitable, you're more successful. And then when you get to a certain point, you might get a bit more freedom. You get control of your future, you get control of your destiny when you own your own business. All of these things come with a lot of hard work, but it's not the guiding principle. And that goes for both business and life. And it's the biggest kind of lesson I learned in a, you know, it's kind of a long answer, but... But I mean, it's complicated to kind of talk about it and that's why I wanted to make sure I documented all of these things and, you know, put it in this moment in time in the book.
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the idea of living, you know, that's the idea of the work-life balance. And that it seems to me it's slightly anathema to a life that's balanced, as it were.
Yes. I mean,
because actually, it's just your life, right?
And
you have to choose and control and manage the things and all the elements that are within your life, because it's your life.
Yeah, well, that's a good example of when I was interviewed by someone and said, you know, when you wrote a book, were you worried about people saying, you know, bad things about your book or saying terrible things about your book? And I said, I'm more worried about, because if, you know, then they're saying terrible things about my life. So... I know, and you know, I'm a polarizing person. It's very easy to say that you don't approve or you disapprove of something. So I can't take that personally.
Sure.
I mean, you know, if I was writing a book, you know, about, you know, a school for wizards, and I made up characters and things, I might, and I worked very hard to develop a very intricate storyline, I might be insulted because you're kind of, you know, criticizing my art.
Yes.
But in this case, life. This is about life, and if you're criticizing my life, that's just your opinion. And
sure.
And you know, the two things that you know this work-life balance thing that you mentioned has traditionally been, you know, people throw that around about, you know, because I don't want to work too hard, I want to make sure I make time for my personal life. You're right. It's just about balance. It's about balancing your place in the universe and finding your purpose. And you have a purpose with your family. You have a purpose with your what you do for a living, you know, how you live your life, how you choose to live your life, you know, the partner or the people that you surround yourself with. These are all choices that just balance your existence. Well, and indeed, business shouldn't be any different.
Well, indeed, I think the well, I think what's fascinating is that if you find something, work that that you are passionate about and that you care about, it's however much you do it, it's an energizing thing, and that energy transfers over onto other elements of your life. Because if you're being fulfilled and feeling joy in one part of your life, then it does translate. And then what you're not doing, you're not trying to. There's no negative drain, as it were.
I can tell you that over the years, the comments that I'm proudest of about people's enjoyment with working with G Ventures is never from the employee themselves. It's from their partner.
Yeah.
When partners come up to me, and I get it on a daily basis, saying, you know, that they came from the corporate world or came from, you know, I have people now that have come from HSBC, Deloitte, like, you know, Swiss Bank, like people who, you know, kind of, they're refugees in many ways. They wash up on our shores.
Yes.
And they go into this detox program on, you know, finding, you know, purpose in their lives and happiness and all these things. And the thing that that drives my own personal happiness is finding, you know, helping people discover that, you know, helping others discover happiness.
Yes.
is what drives my personal happiness. And when I hear from partners saying, you know, I was against, you know, my husband or wife leaving, you know, a big job at, you know, at a bank or an insurance company to come here to this, you know, this travel company, but, you know, I've just never seen them happier. Our home life is completely different.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing things we've never done before. You know, I have employees that, you know, took the year before they worked for me, they went on a Disney cruise. Now they're, as a family, they're seeing Machu Picchu and they're taking safaris in Africa, and it's changed the way their entire family thinks. That's just employees that touch our brand that work for the company.
Sure.
I get my greatest joy of that when people discover that. But they're not changing their specialty. They're still doing accounting, or yep, they're still doing finance, or they're still doing operations, or they're still doing marketing, and they're following their education or their passion, but they're doing it for a company that they believe in and a company that stands for a bit more. And it just flows through all parts of their lives. I can't tell you the amount of times I get kids say that. When my dad's, you know, I've had some people that have been with me 12 or 15 years now. And so I've seen their kids grow up.
Yeah.
You know, their kids, and when they started with me, we were 5 or 6, and now their kids are going to university. And their kids come back as interns or students and come and tell me, you know, my dad just changed. Mom just became a different person, and our whole family changed. And that's the greatest reward I receive, when your work, you know, I say to my people all the time, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Indeed.
You know, when I see that, that's kind of sometimes my greatest moments of what I do, seeing that impact on, you know, families that actually are involved in our business indirectly, because, you know, one of the people in the house, in their household, you know, works for, with G Adventures.
Absolutely. And I think it's the, you know, I was really, I mean, surprised and delighted that to read the foreword of the book that came from the, you know, the Dalai Lama, and that's, I mean, what an honor. First off, but Dalai Lama talks about creating sort of happiness, mm-hmm. and I think there's exactly kind of what you're trying to do here. It's almost like happiness for yourself and for other people, but it's not about stuff. I mean, sometimes stuff is important, and it. We require stuff to live, but actually happiness is more about all sorts of other things, our connections with people and the experiences that we share and the memories that we have and all those things. So I just think some of the stories and some of the insights that are in the book are just fabulous. But the foreword and your own personal story and journey with the encounters with the Dalai Lama, I just thought were great, and I really, really enjoyed reading them.
Yeah, well, he's never endorsed a business book. And he's never written a foreword for a business book, so it was originally a lot of people that surround His Holiness were against him getting involved, and until I got an audience with him to explain, you know, what we were. I mean, I couldn't expect him to sit down and read my book without. And I presented it to him, and he was the motivation on why I wrote it in the first place, with a meeting with him, and when they decided you know, that they would, he would write a foreword. I was expecting text to come through, but after he was briefed, or I don't know if he read my book, I presented numerous copies to his entourage and his people. When it was in transcript form, he insisted that it be written on his letterhead. He wrote it himself, and then he signed it.
Yes.
And that's when it became a very different thing. He's never done that before. And he mentions my name in it and all that kind of stuff, as you can see in the foreword. And it was overwhelming would be an understatement. I mean, it was just one of those moments where, you know, as I keep talking about this thing about purpose, just and finding your place, knowing in that moment, I knew that this book had purpose.
Yeah.
I knew that it was meant to be, and I'm, and it would have a positive impact on people's lives. And that's purely my motivation. Because as I said, I'm not a writer. I don't intend to become an author.
Yep.
And so the purpose of this book was to not only document my story, but, you know, create positive energy around it.
Fantastic. Bruce, so the I'm just conscious of time. Is there anything else you'd like to add for our readers and listeners before I ask you my final question?
Oh, there's a final question.
Yes.
I don't think so. I mean, this was just a good chat. I mean, I don't know. I actually don't know who your listeners are, or what demographic or the type of people that.
Well, generally, it's that they are entrepreneurs, executives, and in corporates. But it's actually a broad base. I mean, the things I talk about and write about on the blog are primarily about things like customer service, customer experience, employee engagement, and at the very heart of it is building a business that both customers love and your employees love.
Yes. Okay. I mean, the only thing I don't have anything very specific to add, but I would, you know, I would talk a little bit about to entrepreneurs who are starting out.
Yeah. Okay.
The importance of, you know, the importance of, you know, when you first start a company, to understand, you know, the concepts I talk about the Luke Taylor, about, you know, creating a business model around your purpose. Mm-hmm. No matter what it is you do, people think it's very easy for me because I run, you know, adventure travel is sexy, but if you're selling computer chips or you're selling, you know, shipping or mail service, whatever it is that you're doing, you got to find your purpose in it and your passion around that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And building all of that stuff initially is very important because people think that, you know, when you're starting, you have no money, you're on a thin budget, but all of this stuff is free. It's just all the intention of putting it around your purpose initially. And it's very important because mm-hmm. nothing's more painful. I think Tony will tell you this as well. That nothing's more painful than when you have to retrofit your business after with all these things and you have to change people's thinking after you've been around for 10 years or 5 years or whatever it is.
Yep.
Because you suddenly want to zig when the company's been zagging for a very long time. Everything becomes much more difficult and you're suddenly forcing change.
Yes.
But if you understand your purpose initially, as an entrepreneur, and I know, you know, you're limited and you're working really hard as an entrepreneur and you're trying to perfect your product and all of those things are important for being successful, but you must spend time on your business model. You must spend time on how you're going to attract people, what you stand for, and engage, how you're going to engage your customers beyond that product, because that is what's going to differentiate you, you know. Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook often says, you know, if there's two companies of equal standing and equal product, the company that's more social will always win. And I really believe that, and this is part. A lot of this is about, you know, and social has its own definition, but a lot of this has to do with entrepreneurs understanding the present landscape in which people consume and engage with brands. And you have to understand it's about brands that make them feel a certain way or brands that make their lives better. And they look very closely at companies and the transparency that, you know, the consumer has today to you know, to be a microscope to look at your company, it goes beyond your product. Because in schools, they teach you so much about, you know, you have to have the best product, you have to win. There's so many examples now with people who have the best product and someone can knock it off cheaper, faster, and easier, and they lose their audience because they didn't engage their customers properly. They focus too much on the product. Now, you have to have a great product, but it's not the be-all, end-all in the modern economy.
Excellent. So, Bruce, my final question that I always end these interviews on is,
okay.
is this. Is
right.
there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
To shamelessly plug?
Yeah.
Ah, yes. I have tons. Well, first of all, my book. And review my book if you read it and you love it. Luke Tale. I mean, that's the thing that I'm here to talk to you about. But, you know, if I'm going to shamelessly plug anything, I'm just going to go back to travel. And I'm not going to – and one of our – state. one of the models within the company is, if you can't travel with us, travel like us.
Okay.
You know, travel has the ability to transform the world. It could be, if done the right way, where local communities benefit and local people benefit from your tourism dollars. At the present time, out of every $100 spent by a tourist, only $5 stays in country, according to UNEP, the United Nations Environment Program.
Yeah.
But if travel is done right, and local communities benefit, and you know, foundations are created to give back to local communities where people are successful, and where travel holding companies are making billions of dollars, travel can be the greatest form of wealth distribution the world has ever seen. 1 billion travelers for the first time this year in 2012, tourist travelers. We hit 1 billion travelers this year for the first time. And travel is expected to generate $10 trillion annually within the next 10 years.
Wow.
So if done right, tourism can be, you know, this great form of wealth distribution. And the other thing that's staggering is, out of the 40 poorest countries in the world, tourism is the second largest form of revenue next to oil to those countries. So tourism has the ability to transform and change people's lives. And I have this noble purpose of what tourism could do. If the consumer just got off the all-inclusives, cruise ships, and, you know, coach tours, and got out there and spent their money locally, you know, it would balance the world and create wealth distribution like the world has never seen. And so, you know, what I'm plugging shamelessly is for people to understand, to travel with purpose, and to understand the power that they have, and the idea, just think for the idea that your form of giving could be your holiday. People give to charities all the time that they feel good about, but just imagine if you could take all of that money that you save and just go on holiday and have a positive impact on people's lives, and that could be your charitable giving, what that would take. And, you know, and so I'm kind of selling that concept, if I have, you know, a moment in this interview, just tell you what I'm selling.
Bruce, that's brilliant. And I'd just like to say that I really enjoyed your book. I think it was a really inspiring story. I think I'm probably going to go and read it again. I think the plug around how we should travel and how we can use travel as a way of redistributing kind of wealth, I know it's something that's very close to my wife's heart, and something that we try and do as much as we possibly can. But I just think it's a great, great story. And I just want to say thank you for your time today. That's been brilliant.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.